Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the first hour, the views of Melody Cederstrom, who supports Radio Liberty, and we always love having her on. Hi, Melody. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Well, you know, we're living in rather exciting financial times. Certainly, I'm sure your area is in ours. Why are the headlines of all of the newspapers are talking about the collapse of the housing bubble? How long we've been talking about this and about the fact it was going to happen?
It's been quite a while. 2 years, 3 years. It's been a long time since we've been talking about it.
Yeah, and you know what, Chris, everybody knows what's happening. The people who have the adjustable rate mortgages just can't make the payments now. The payments on for a house might go up from, say, $1,800 a month up to $3,000 a month, and they just no way they can make the house payments, and if they can't sell the house, they're going to have it foreclosed on. Foreclosures are increasing dramatically in the areas where I live and certainly adjacent counties here in California. There's a lot of foreclosures going on, and I think people are getting a little concerned about it. But, you know, Melody, nobody ever asks why this is happening. And, of course, the reason it's happening is because Alan Greenspan, who is a brilliant man, when he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, encouraged people to take out loans he knew that they would never be able to make the payments on when the interest rates went up and they had the adjustable rate mortgages. He encouraged mortgage brokers and companies to make those loans to unqualified brokers, and nobody ever asked why. Have you noticed that?
You're absolutely correct. You never hear. In fact, it seems like Wall Street, when you watch the mainstream financial cheerleaders, they surely have distanced themselves from Greenspan, you don't hear them referring to him anymore, he is a thing of the past, because they if they talk about him and they talk about what they did and what he did, then they would all have to agree and start or begin speaking the truth that they were all in on the program to begin with also. So the housing market, and you know what's also sad too is jobs. At one point in time, perhaps if there were better jobs and we didn't have so many jobs leaving this country and manufacturing leaving this country and being outsourced and offshored, perhaps people would have a chance to maybe go get or to improve themselves and perhaps get higher wages or possible inflation wages or increases, and that's not happening either. So they don't have a chance.
And of course, the thing is that if you really analyze what Alan Greenspan and the others did, certainly they kept the interest rate down, discount rate down to 1% for a couple of years, knowing full well it was going to be highly inflationary. They've been massively increasing the money supply, knowing that in a couple of years that the inflationary spiral would come. They have made mistake after mistake. They refused to, for instance, regulate the hedge funds. They refused to regulate the derivative market when people in Congress were saying, we've got to do this. If those things ever start to unravel, it'll bring down the whole financial system. And Alan Greenspan and the people of the Fed are very smart people. And we have to ask why they have done everything wrong. And I believe it was intentional. We'll be right back with Melody. Well, Melody, certainly as we're watching what's happening as far as the stock market's concerned, that's having sort of a roller coaster ride too, isn't it? What happened today?
Well, the market was down, at one point it was down about 430-some points, 440 points, and they were able to bring it back, and it closed at 311. But it's not just our markets, but it's the markets around the world. So the markets last evening were hit hard. They were all down 1, 2, and even some were down 3%. And I believe we're going to see the same thing happen this evening. We have the Nikkei that last time I looked about 15 minutes ago, that was down over 400 points. And the Hang Seng, I believe, was down like 150 points. So, and I believe the Australia markets were open and they were all down significantly. So it is continuing. The futures for the Dow right now are showing some sort of an increase, but very mild. So if it continues, we could see another down, a significant down day, and tomorrow is Friday. So a lot of people will want to make their position before the weekend, so it could be a very volatile day tomorrow. Gold is up in the aftermarket. It's up about $3 in the aftermarket, even though that market trades lightly. It's still up. But we also had we've had option expirations, and usually when options expire, it's a great time for them to come in and put pressure on gold, because it is gold always trades soft during this time, and so it's very easy for them to make the price of gold go down. And that we saw, because gold was down about $18 for the week. So we'll have to see if it can retain its $3 increase overnight and see how it opens in the morning. But people become so upset when they see these markets, and if you're in gold and silver, at least you should be a little secure, or a lot secure, in your holdings and knowing that you're being protected from the devaluation of what the markets will be. And is this the ultimate decline? I don't know, but there's a report that came out today when you're talking about the delinquencies and foreclosures. They said that 2.5 million first mortgages will default this year. What's interesting is the delinquencies will only peak in the summer of 2008.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Melody was saying that gold, certainly in the aftermarket, was up $3, but it had been really forced down previously. That what they're talking about today, you know, is the fact that the foreclosures will probably peak in the year 2008. That is probably about a year from now. And then, of course, as you know, the stock market here in the United States was down dramatically. They brought it back partway, but the markets throughout the rest of the world seem to be dropping precipitously just in the last 24 to 48 hours. What does this foretell? What does this suggest to you, Melody? Is this whole a financial house of cards that we've been talking about for so long beginning to unravel? And what's it going to mean for the average person out there listening to our program?
I believe it is beginning to unravel. And sometimes they unravel overnight, and sometimes it takes time for the unraveling to become unraveled, I guess. But if you have gold and silver, you can rest assured that you're being protected. Even though we saw gold decline this week, I believe I don't think they have any more rabbits in their hat. And their goal is to maintain that U.S. dollar. when you look at the U.S. dollar and you view it as the world reserve currency, and we all know that the U.S. is basically bankrupt, but the world trade, the world commerce is all based on that U.S. dollar, they will fight tooth and nail to keep some sort of strength in that dollar, even though it isn't an illusion. So I think that's what the big battle is. And then you have all these other pressures with the credit markets. And you have to remember, too, all the nations around the world are, they're all fiat currencies. They're all paper currencies. It's just not the dollar that's a paper currency in the world. And the supply of other currencies is growing rapidly. So, I mean, when it comes unraveled, it's going to be globally, and I think this is what you're seeing now. And will they be able to maintain it for a month or two? I don't have a crystal ball, but I definitely do believe that these are the beginning signs.
All right, fine. Well, Sydney, something big happened this last week, since we last talked, anyway, and that is that the dollar, in relationship to the basket of currencies, had gotten below 80. Now, for our listeners out there, I mean, what we have is a fiat money system. In other words, you just create money out of nothing. You can go ahead and print all you want to. You can throw out helicopters. That's what Ben Bernanke said. You know, we're not going to allow deflation. If we have to, why, we'll just print money and throw it out of helicopters to keep the economy going. Well, that's almost what they're doing today. They're lying to the American people about the M3. This, of course, is the how you evaluate how much money and credit they're creating. At the present time, at least according to Bob Chapman and verified by other people, the M3 is about 11%, which is the real rate of inflation. And, of course, they anticipate by next year it could be up to 15% with all the credit they produce. When you begin to get into an inflationary spiral like this, it's only a matter of time before the entire value of the currency collapses. And there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has survived. It didn't survive in ancient Greece. It didn't survive in ancient Rome. It didn't survive in medieval Europe. Certainly it didn't survive under John Law in France in the early 1700s, in America when, of course, we tried in 1776 during the Revolutionary War to finance the war with paper money. It didn't survive in France at the time of the French Revolution, 1789, where they printed fiat money. It has never survived throughout all time, but gold-backed currency has given you stability. And if you actually look at what's happened to the currency prices in England between about 1210 and the 1900s, I think it was 20, the price of goods went up approximately 0.4% a year over that. A 600 or 700 year period, because you had a gold-backed currency. And certainly in England between about 1800 and the end of the Second World War, there was no price inflation. Things were about the same price at the end of either the First or Second World War as they were in 1800, because there was gold behind the money. And once you take the gold backing away from the money, why, of course, you irresponsible politicians will destroy the currency. And they're not only destroying it in this country, they're destroying it throughout the world. And the average individual, already believing that money has value, doesn't understand what's about to befall him, our country, and the world monetary system. But where did the dollar fall? It had actually broken below 80 this week. Have they been able to get it above 80, or is it beginning to fall below 80?
Well, it was, it broke, it came back up to about 80.50, and it was down today, hovering around 80.30. And you're right, politicians haven't changed throughout the many years. They're all the same. They're always, the future will always be the same for the politicians. And they don't care about anybody else, and it is pretty much every man for himself. And when the stock markets fall and there's a sell-off, it's going to destroy trillions of people's, what they believe is wealth and their values, and they really don't care. And as far as I'm concerned, it is part of their agenda anyway. Wall Street was their bank. It financed into the promotion of the New World Order. And if people truly believe they're going to walk away with what they have in there, they're going to be sadly mistaken, because I just really don't believe, just like when the dot-coms, people thought they'd be able to walk away with all that money. And who really walked away from it? One or two. But the majority of the people lost tremendous amounts of money, and it's going to happen again. And it's disturbing, because I get calls every day, and people just don't believe it. I've had calls this week where people wanted to sell their gold so they can get involved in currency trading.
I know. I hope you talked about it.
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
But these currency traders, they're calling and telling people to sell their gold. You know, you don't want that gold. It's too difficult to store. You know, we'll take your gold. We'll sell it for you and get you. I mean, I've talked to people this week who are 100% vested in stocks. And it's like, wow, don't you understand what's going on? And they assure me they do, but yet for them to buy an ounce of gold and take physical possession of it, and paper is not the same as taking physical possession of your gold. If you need to be in gold stocks, you should have at least, if you have, it should be 50-50. You know, whatever amount you have, and you have to be in gold stocks, at least offset it with the same amount of gold. And it's, sometimes I just don't get it. They listen to these programs, they listen to everybody talk, and for some reason they feel they're immune to what is going to happen. And I believe a lot of people just can't grasp the degree of the dire situation that faces us, or perhaps, you know, they don't, and maybe they're a little more hopeful that it won't be as bad as what we talk and what we discuss. But when you look at the numbers, and when you're talking about, what, $500 trillion in derivatives, that is basically has no value. I mean, these numbers are just staggering. I mean, absolutely staggering.
$500 trillion. $1 trillion. I mean, I have a hard time imagining what $1 billion is, but a $1 trillion?
I know.
And then $500 trillion in derivatives. And, of course, there are people in Congress who are pleading with the Federal Reserve System, you've got to regulate the hedge funds. If they ever start to, because they're highly leveraged, they may be leveraged 10 to 1 or 20 to 1 or 30 to 1 or 50 to 1, and they ever started to turn against them, it would take the whole financial system down. And we know that recently Bear Stearns, it was a large banking house, investment house, and they lost at least $6 billion. In fact, they put another $3 billion in to keep a cascading effect, and I think they've lost that too. I mean, it was certainly not too many years ago, a year and a half or two ago, when some options trader, I think it was with Barings Bank, a 100-year-old British international bank, and he invested in options. They turned against him, and literally overnight, he lost the entire equity of that bank. And, of course, many of our banks today are heavily invested, in these CDOs, these collateralized debt obligations, and we're trying to get the Chinese to borrow them. The Chinese are too smart to buy these things, but many of our hedge funds are moving into them now. Even some of the pension funds think that they're going to be smart enough to play this game. I mean, what really frightens me is what happens when the funds and the pension funds that guarantee the life savings of so many of our elderly people, they suddenly begin to go down. Anyway, Melody, I think that somebody's got to be out there warning the American people that I believe we are on the very edge of a great precipice, and we've got to let the American people, somebody's got to tell the American people that this is not a game, that everything has been done to ensure the destruction of the value of our currency. Who would do that? Why, the same people who've been manipulating our currency and moving us towards a new world order for the better part of a century. We'll be right back here with Melody, and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, Melody, certainly, you see you're getting a lot of calls. Is this a lot more than usual?
I'm noticing a lot of different calls.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Yeah.
Okay, and Melody, certainly always been a pleasure. But we've been talking about these same things, the coming collapse of the housing bubble, the coming collapse of the stock market. I mean, and right now, of course, the inflationary spiral, which is very real. And why is it real? Because inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increase in the money supply. And, of course, the money supply is being increased dramatically. Prices are then going up secondarily, although they lag behind the money supply. And then, of course, we have the forces that are coming to us from other countries, specifically the price of oil, which is being manipulated by the international cartel and allowed to rise. And, of course, with the rise of the price of oil, it means there's less and less money for people to spend here, and the economy begins to grind down. And as the economy grinds down, then people have to be let off work, whether it's in manufacturing or in sales. And so we're beginning to see the end, in my estimation, of this economic cycle that has been maintained artificially for so many years. What are your thoughts, Melody?
Well, I agree with you. And it is amazing with so little confidence in Congress that things aren't happening. You know, it's just, you know, with so little confidence, you would think that you'd see a little more change than what there is. But there is. And, you know, you're also correct in seeing that greed turn to fear. And that's what we'll see, these markets move. And right now there's just a little bit of uncertainty. But, you know, inflation does take away the consumer's purchasing power. This country is the whole economic system is based on spending, no saving. These people have nowhere else to obtain funds to continue their buying spree, their shopping spree that they've been on for, you know, the past 5-6 years. And they truly need to start making some decisions, and hopefully they'll be able to see the signs and perhaps begin to protect themselves and purchase gold as the insurance policy, just like people have house insurance, car insurance, health insurance, and so forth. Gold can be your insurance policy against these financial hard times.
And I really do believe that very, very difficult times lie ahead as we see our jobs being sent overseas, as we see our factories being sent overseas, as we see our currency, the value of the American dollar, are beginning to fall in relationship to other currencies, which means that things we buy from abroad will be much more expensive. And, of course, I think the good times purchasing things cheaply from the Chinese are just about over. And we've had a great ride giving them. They have given us their products made by their people, and we've been giving them worthless paper dollars. But those Chinese are pretty smart. And, of course, they're forming something called a sovereign fund. And they're coming over to America with a couple of $100 billion at the first stage. And they're going to start buying up whatever they can find for sale. Corporations, roadways, utilities, doesn't matter what it is. They want to get their money into something solvent, because they realize, as the American people do not, that it's only paper money, it's only monopoly money. And if it's not got into something of inherent value now, one day they could wake up, as the average American will, with a verse fistful of dollars, and you find it's simply monopoly money. It's fiat money without any real value. Well, I telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY-464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, you'd think that this is simply a hysteria. Why, Chris, we'd love to hear from you. I'm sure there are people out there who really have confidence in our currency, because it's always had value. And yet you trace what's happened over the last, since 1913, the dollar has lost 96% of its value. You know, under the Federal Reserve Board, what was their job? Why, it was to maintain the stability of our currency. While they haven't maintained the stability of our currency, they've destroyed the stability of our currency. But of course, these people have a different agenda. They have no loyalty to America or to our people. These are part of a cabal dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion and a new world leader. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Melody Cedarstrom, and so sending Melody as we see what's going on. Why, of course, we try to warn people and tell them that they have to learn about money. The average person thinks money has value, but it is simply because they've used the currency for so long. But people in other countries, in China and in India, they know the real money is not paper, it's gold. And certainly aren't people in those countries accumulating gold and silver?
Yes, they are. There more exchanges are being opened in other countries, and they're making it more accessible to the people in the different countries. China and India, they've always been big buyers of gold. The Europeans, the Canadians, and the Americans are the ones that prefer their paper currencies and continue to have the faith in a paper currency. And I guess that's all they've had. That's all they've understood. You know, there aren't the young people anymore. I mean, there's how many generations removed from the gold standard, so they don't have a strong understanding of what money is. I mean, they have a dollar, they can go out and they buy whatever they want, but truly they don't understand value anymore, because certainly the items that we get from China, even though they pay a lower price, certainly have no value, because, you know, how many times have you buy something and they break? And you have to go, you know, so... You know, the low cost of something does not mean that it's quality and that it has real value. And I think this country, the people in this country no longer understand value. They've been placed in a position where it's harder and harder for them to survive. They've been using their debt as survival debt, their credit card for, you know, survival credit to pay their gas bills, their food bills, their children's school clothes and school books.
Yeah, but on the other side, the interest on a lot of these plastic cards is going up. You remember, they get you in, you know, 3%, 6%, 9%. Now some of them are up to 12 to 18% interest on those credit cards.
Yeah, I don't see any more introductory 0% interest anymore. In fact, I got a notice today for a 9.9 introductory notice, and it's just like...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. We had Phil calling from New York. We lost him, but Phil wants to come back. I'll be glad to talk to him. But right now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Melody Cedarstrom, and Melody, would you like to get your telephone number out so people would know how to get in touch with you and talk to you if they're interested in learning more about what's going on?
Sure. My telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The company is Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And if you'd like to visit the website, you can go to discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you have any questions or comments, you can email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And there's been a lot of questions on how to get started. How do I get protected? How do I begin? What do I do? There's always rule of thumbs, and I do things a little bit differently. I don't do a one coin that fits everybody. I look at each individual, where their money is working for them, and we put together a plan and a portfolio based on the suitability of what coins go into their portfolio. As a minimum, 30 to 50% of your hard assets should be in gold and silver. I hear people who recommend 10% and 15%. Even Wall Street recommends 10 and 15% of precious metals during good times. So you certainly want to have more than that during bad times. The 30 and 50% is a rule of thumb. The majority of my clients have 70 and 80%, and some of them, of course, have 100%. But it's based on an individual objective of things to come and each individual's financial status. Of that 30 to 50%, 80% should be gold and 20% should be silver. And, of course, you can adjust that, you know, either way if, again, it's based on your investment objective. And these are just starting places in which you can begin your gold and silver portfolio and begin to allocate funds into to accumulate gold to protect you. So these are rule of thumbs, 80% gold, 20% silver. And the best thing to do is to be a little diversified. You want to have a little bit of gold bullion. You want to have some semi-numismatics, not the rare coins, because they are a select group. But you can, first you want to build your foundation. And again, the coins are based on the individual's suitability. So what might be good for one person, perhaps we'd adjust for another person. Gold coins, the ones that you've heard bad things about, it isn't the gold coins that are bad. It's the misrepresentation of the gold coins and perhaps not telling you everything about a gold coin. And the one thing that's often eliminated is when you go to sell back that gold coin. How does it work in the marketplace? You know, a 1 ounce gold eagle will usually sell above spot gold when you go to sell it back. Everybody talks about buying gold, but they don't talk about selling it. So gold eagles will usually sell above spot gold, and it does depend on the market. When gold was $7.20, gold eagles were selling back as much as $8, $8 to $10 over spot. When you go into a circulated $20 gold piece, these sell back below what a gold eagle will sell for. You can buy these, and there's premiums on them because they're the old $20 gold pieces, and they're sold as being non-confiscatable and private, but when you go to sell it back, you'll get less than what a gold eagle goes for. So the value at this point in time is not there. The only time you really want to buy a circulated older U.S. gold coin is if you have a large spread between that coin and a mint state coin, even a low-grade mint state 61. If the spread is great, like the $10 Indian, you can have like a 200-plus spread between an extra fine and a mint state 61. Well, that kind of makes a little sense. You might want to stop and think about, well, do I want to spend the $200? But when you have a $50 spread between an extra fine $20 gold piece and a mint state 61 $20 gold piece, the value is there. There's a little more risk when you have a circulated $20 gold piece because there's really no set value of that coin. I call them opinion coins because when you go to sell that coin, it's really the opinion of who you're selling that coin to determines the value of the coin. So by spending $50, you're certainly taking away that risk. And then when you get into the mint state grades, of course, the higher you go, the more return you'll have when the general populace gets into the market. And again, these coins, a lot are based on the suitability of each person as they get into the market, whether confiscation is an important issue, whether you're just looking for privacy and return on your money. So, you know, there's other issues that become involved. And again, when we talk about the semi-numismatics, we're not talking rare coins. The semi-numismatics basically work in two markets. You know, they respond to the bullion prices, and they will respond to the collectible market. So you're basically getting two coins for the price of one. So you get a double edge when it comes to when the prices rise, and that's why they do so well. But they do take a special market. It will happen when gold exceeds 850 to, you know, 950, when the general populace gets into the market, and the general populace will excel the prices on this.
All right. Well, what would people get right now, in your estimation? What should they be getting?
Well, again, it comes back to the individual. It comes back to, I think, if you're a bullion buyer, you know, just get 1 ounce gold eagles. Krugerrands usually will sell closer to the spot price. I believe right now the semi-numismatics, like the Mint State 61s, is a great place to buy. Also, I consider those as bullion because the spreads between a gold eagle and a Mint State 61 is so narrow, the value there, and they've never been so close.
Now, what is a Mint State 61?
Well, a Mint State 61 would be your $20 Liberties, your St. Gaudens.
All right, these are circulated in $20 gold pieces.
These are uncirculated.
Oh, uncirculated.
Uncirculated $20 gold pieces, $10 gold pieces, five. But I often just refer to the $20 gold pieces. But these are uncirculated $20 gold pieces. And often it's said that dealers sell these coins because they make more commission. Well, that's just not true. I make the same on a 61 as I do a 66. So it that's not the reason. And some of your high-value dealers, your high-cost dealers, the ones that charge, you know, 30 and 40 and 50% commission, you know, they make the same, too. They make the same on a 61 versus a Mint State 65. So, it's more misunderstanding of the different types of coins. So,
all right, fine. Well, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Melody, and she's right on the cutting edge of what's going on. She's how long have you been in the coin business, Melody?
Oh, since the early 90s.
All right, fine. Do you enjoy it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, fine. I really suspected you did, and certainly I've had a number of people that dealt with you, and they've all been very, very pleased. So, but I think it's important that people understand that they're going to have to do something to protect their wealth. Will some of the stocks maintain the value? Probably for the time being, but the value will be, of course, determined in paper dollars. And, of course, is there the real value in that stock? I was reading an article on General Motors this last week. And, of course, people have been drumming General Motors. Boy, General Motors is doing great. I mean, buy this stock, and they were able to drive the price up, I think, from about $20 to $40 a share for General Motors stock. And the article in Little Rockwell was pointing out that the real value of General Motors is $50 billion in the hole. In other words, it would take $50 billion to get it back to having no value at all. And yet, of course, they are manipulating hedge funds and pension funds and mutual funds and unsophisticated people into buying General Motors stock when General Motors, of course, at the present, for all intents and purposes, is long since bankrupt. Their stock has been lowered to junk level, a grade. At one time it was said what's good for General Motors is good for America. And now, of course, it's what's good for General Motors is probably good for Ford or Chrysler, but certainly not good for America because together, you know, all of our major automotive companies, American automotive companies, are in serious, serious jeopardy. And all of them, of course, are on the verge of bankruptcy, and even talking about going into bankruptcy to try to stave off their debtors. And this is a tragic situation for what used to be, of course, the foundation of America's manufacturing potential. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the question is, are they going to be able to drive the prices of the stock market back up again? Are they going to be able to control the price of commodities? There's some people who really believe that the inflationary cycle has begun to take off, and with an M3 running over 11%, the government saying, oh, it's just too expensive to print the M3. We don't have the money to figure out what's really happening on the monetary point. And, of course, the truth of the matter is they're lying. They don't want the American people to know that they're taking us into an inflationary spiral, which everything I see has convinced me that the people who are really in charge are intent upon destroying the value of our currency. And then, of course, they'll be able to get out from under all these debts and obligations they have, and you simply inflate away all of your obligations. Isn't that wonderful? And the only trouble is you end up impoverishing the people. Any thoughts on that, Mike? Before we go to Mike from Coeur d'Alene?
No, I disagree with you, and inflation takes away people's wealth, and there's only one way to protect it, and that's with gold.
All right, well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, good evening, Dr. Stan. I did want to ask about gold and silver and commodities. I agree that they are not investments. They are saving mechanisms of wealth. But during the Spanish Empire's conquest, they actually inflated gold by when you expand the money supply above the products that are in the marketplace, you have inflation. And so when they would go out into conquest and take over countries' gold and bring it back to Spain, they had inflation. Now, no doubt gold and silver and precious metal commodities are under huge manipulation. What is to say, especially when they're trading internationally in metric tons, and I can only purchase in small ounces, what is to say that if they did crash the dollar, that the holders of the enormous amounts of gold wouldn't flood the market with gold and thus continue an inflationary cycle with gold?
I think that's an excellent question. Would you like to try to answer that one, Melody?
Well, I just don't believe there's enough gold out there in order to flood to do the same as, you know, perhaps the Spanish did. When you're looking at $500 trillion in derivatives, there's not enough gold. The price of gold would have to go to, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, because there's just not that much gold out there.
Well, I agree that it is a limited source. And if we were to compare apples to apples from 1970 with the price inflation that was going on there to how much gold was in circulation or available at that time, and we looked at it today, gold should be right around $2,400 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're talking metric tons,
right.
And there has been more mining and more advanced mining of gold in the last century than there had been during the Spanish conquest when they inflated gold. I'm just asking, do you see that as a possibility?
I think that, Chris, what you're seeing today is the central banks of the world manipulating the price of gold. I mean,
right.
When they first, why are they selling all of this gold? Why? Because they're selling it to drive the price down. They're frightened to death. The price of gold is going to go up. And, of course, they make their money by actually being able to create paper money out of nothing. If people were to demand return to a gold-backed currency, why, many of these central banks would be in real trouble. Well, let me tell you what the people of the secret government of the Council on Foreign Relations are talking about. There's an article, and it was in the last couple of months, about the need for a global currency, and not the Amero, as we've talked about, but a new currency that all countries would be forced to have. And what they were suggesting was a gold-backed currency privately issued, since you couldn't trust government, this would be a privately issued gold-backed currency. I really think that this is where they are going. When they sell 500 tons of gold, who do you think buys that gold? When the Central Bank of England sells that much, who do you think buys it?
Well, there is actually no real transfer of that wealth. It's done on the EMF fund trading silver and gold. There's no actual. It's just paper trading back and forth. It's like the warehouse men all over again.
You're absolutely right. So this has nothing to do with real gold. It's all artificial. It has to do with perception.
Yep.
And they're trying to make you believe, of course, that they're really selling the gold. They're not going to get rid of their gold. That is the only thing that backs the currencies throughout the world. And, of course, they know that sooner or later the crash is going to come. And, of course, they might very well face being taken out and hung from lampposts if they don't, you know, have something to give some stability to their currency. Central bankers have an obligation to maintain stability. They've not done it, and that's why they maintain the gold. And, of course, all of these gold sales are simply paper sales, as you say. They know the secret they don't want us to know, and that is paper currency has no value. Gold has intrinsic value, and one day we're going to get to a gold-backed currency, I think. But, of course, I'm not sure when. Hey, thanks so much for calling. Well, Mike, you've got, by me, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to close down the program. Oh, what message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
I agree with you with the amount of gold. In fact, there's some reports that, you know, you can always find different little tidbits on the Internet. You know, the amount of gold ever mined would fit into 60 tractor trailers. I mean, it's the idea and the illusion of the amount of gold that's out there. And people do need to... I never want to create fear, but I think this is something that people need to be aware of and protect their wealth. They need to preserve their wealth and just buy gold as an insurance policy. Profits are secondary, but they'll be there. And I have no doubt in my mind one day we're going to wake up and I believe things will have all changed. And if they need help in getting their gold and silver portfolio together, or even if they'd like me to review what they already have, they can call me at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You can visit the website at discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And we also offer gold and silver IRAs, self-directed IRAs, for those of you who, you know, just can't, you know, take the penalties and pay the taxes and you have it in paper and you want to roll it over, we can do that for you. There's a lot of firms out there who put proof gold into those accounts, and please don't put proof gold coins in your IRAs. Just get the regular 1 ounce gold eagles or silver eagles. You'll do far better. I had a customer today, if he would have placed gold eagles in his account, he would have gained 46%. There's a firm in California that sold him proof coins, and he made 4%. So there's a big difference in the amount of profit that you can be made, that can be made with the different types of product that you purchase. So there's a lot of pressure out there on firms. We have people calling, people offering, people selling, people saying anything to get your business. So if you have any questions or you hear something that sounds a little strange, just give me a call at 800-375-4188.
All right. Well, I tell you, there's a lot of sharks in the water out there, and they're smelling blood. And so be careful, ladies and gentlemen. All I can say is be careful. And remember, of course, that when people are calling you, they're not trying to do you a favor. They're trying to enrich themselves. Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here with Melody. Well, Melody, I want you to give your telephone number out just one more time before we let you go.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's 1-800-375-4188.
And your webpage again?
The webpage is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
All right.
Discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
God bless. Talk to you
Thank
later.
You,
Thanks so very much.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Okay, Fred, that was Melody. And for our listeners out there, said that you'll want to get a copy of my July newsletter. We're addressing this. We're addressing the fact that prices have been stable for hundreds and hundreds of years. When we had a gold-backed currency, and since we got in the fiat money system, the American dollar has lost 96% of its value since 1913. And, of course, the greatest period of inflation has been in recent years. And right now, inflation is running about 11% because that's the rate of M3 that the government is concealing from the American people. Why won't they tell us what the M3 rate of inflation is? Why? Because they don't want you to know until it's too late. And of course, this will become apparent in a year or two, and you're talking then by then maybe even a much higher rate of inflation. So this is totally destructive to everything, and inflation simply is a vehicle for stealing from the public. And as Daniel Webster said, of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money. So inflation is simply a hidden tax on the gullible. Well, if you'd like to have more information, you certainly would want to read our pamphlet on the history of money, listen to my talk on the financial tsunami. The financial tsunami, it's available in DVD or VHS, and there's an excellent syllabus that goes with that that will explain so much of what we're talking about. That is the financial tsunami. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and the book Fiat Money, Inflation in France by Arthur Dickinson White, was written well over 100 years ago about what happened in France in 1789 following the French Revolution, when they tried just what we're trying to do today. It doesn't work, it's not going to work, and it's going to result in a terrible disaster. And as it did in France, of course, it destroyed the whole structure of society to the point where people were looking, they were looking for a dictatorship. And what did they end up with? Napoleon Bonaparte and a series of disastrous wars. Well, that's exactly where we're headed. Fiat money, inflation in France, a must read for anybody who wants to know what history tells us about fiat money systems. We hope that many of you out there, of course, will want to go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. You can actually pull down all the newsletters I've written on gold, but they're all in this little pamphlet, five newsletters called The History, What You Should Know About the History of Money. And, of course, we do hope that many of you are making preparations for the very difficult times that I believe lie ahead. We're told, of course, that in September, Condoleezza Rice is going to be going to Canada. They're going to be planning the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the new North American community, and they're going to be talking extensively about what to do when the epidemic hits. Epidemic? Well, yes, of course, they know an epidemic's going to hit, and they don't know whether it's going to be a flu epidemic or some other epidemic. But we've got to begin to mobilize Canada and Mexico and the United States in preparation for the coming epidemic, the epidemic that threatens the lives of countless millions of people. So they obviously know something that you and I don't know. And if you doubt that they create new diseases, terrible diseases, that to kill millions of people, you need to get the book Project Daylily, written by our good friend Dr. Garth Nicholson, one of the world's leading scientists. That's Project Daylily, that and the other things we mentioned. Again, you can learn more by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They're my views and the views of our callers. And, or the Krista views of our special guest. And tonight, for this hour, we're going to have Barry Shamish with us again. But before we get to Barry, I wanted to share with you something that I've read on the internet. And that was, a rather startling, article. And it commented that, in Israel, of course, we'd always thought that everybody in Israel had a gas mask and a kit, you know, with certain injectables, atropine for poison gas, and of course the potassium iodate for a nuclear attack, and everything that they would need for chemical, biological, or nuclear warfare. But it said that after, and I forgot whether it was the war last year or what it was, that they'd actually gone around and picked up all the gas masks so they could renew the kits because they'd been opened and maybe they didn't have the atropine in there for chemical warfare. Whatever it was, they went around and they picked up all the gas masks and then they had reissued them. They just didn't have the money, they didn't have the time. And so for the first time in many years, the people of Israel do not have gas masks. But certainly, in the past, this has not been a major affair, a major threat, but it is a very real threat today. Because, of course, Syria has literally thousands of missiles aimed at Israel, and many of these missiles are tipped with either chemical or biological warfare agents. I believe that they're the ones that they got from Saddam Hussein, but be that as it may. I mean, for the first time, there's a chance of a strike with weapons of mass destruction, sarin, mustard gas, things of that sort, that could be thrown in at Israel. And the article didn't make any sense. I mean, why not just, at least collect a few of the gas masks and then fix them up and then give them back again so that most of the people would have gas masks? But they didn't do that. They collected them all. So we have a friend who has a family over there, and they actually, sent a message over to Israel, to their family, and said, what about the gas masks? And they confirmed the story. Very, very few Israelis have gas masks when Israel is suddenly facing the possibility of a chemical or biological attack. Doesn't make sense. It's not logical. It's any more it's logical than Alan Greenspan would have encouraged people to take out these adjustable rate mortgages and then encourage the mortgage companies to make loans on mortgages that would never be repaid. It doesn't make sense, and yet we know what happened. And if it doesn't make sense, there had to be another explanation. And collecting all the gas masks from all the Israelis and then not giving them back again and saying, oh, shucks, we just don't have the money, where the threat is so real, and we're talking about possibly a matter of weeks or at the most months before there's going to be a missile attack on Israel. It doesn't make sense. Barry, have you heard this story about the Israelis not having gas masks today?
Yeah. I've talked to my family. And they have the same old gas masks they always had. Apparently they've expired. But if you hand out gas masks, I guess that would cause panic and a concern. And the last thing you would think is that Israelis are concerned about this upcoming war. This is unbelievable when you think about it, because last summer, 2 million Israelis abandon their homes.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead, Barry.
Last summer, everyone up north from Hadera onto the Lebanese border, in major cities, Haifa, Sfat, Tiberias, Metula, Nahariya, they all left. Or else if they didn't have a car and were too afraid to get on a bus, they stayed in shelters for 34 days. The point is nobody is looking at the trauma. What it means, if you're from Haifa and these missiles came into the sky, which they did in many hundreds, the type of fear you felt for your life and the lives of your children, and the kind of trauma of knowing one of these rocks could land on your home and destroy your life and your memories, this has had a tremendous traumatic effect on at least a third of Israel. I've read reports of children, and they're giving tests to children and to see what they want out of life, and all they want right now is that the rockets stop flying. In other words, there has been tremendous damage done to the psyche of the northern Israelis, and nobody's mentioning this. Nobody. This is a nation that has been under rocket attack. And as I said before, I mean, if they think last year's attack was a problem, 4,000 missiles in 34 days, wait till they see 10,000 in one day on top of Tel Aviv, and you'll know what a problem is.
Well, now, of course, Sidney, did you check out that article I told you about
yeah.
this fellow writing for the Jerusalem Post who said that Israel has no alternative other than to a preemptive strike to stop this before it occurs?
This isn't an Air Force. This isn't 1967. You don't do a preemptive strike against missiles that well. They're underground. And there's a lot of them, and they're deep underground. And the ones that aren't underground are on trucks that are moving around all the time, and they're never in the same spot. And you don't just preempt a missile war, unless they've got some amazing ground-crushing missiles that can be shot from the air and blow up these bunkers. These missiles are away from any preemptive strike. That's simple. This man, Gil Sadan, is thinking that it is still 1967, or for that matter, 73, that you went after the opposition's air force and knocked them out. Missiles aren't an air force.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Barry Sammons. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening for this hour is going to be Barry Sammons, who is a Jewish patriot, an Israeli patriot, concerned about his country, who certainly has done a great deal of investigative journalism, and he's written a number of books. And if you haven't gotten his books, we'll tell you later how to get them, because he has an entirely different slant on what's going on there than you're going to get from the controlled media here in the United States today. But we'll let Barry go ahead, pick up the story. We're talking, about the very real threat of annihilation of Israel today, and certainly what can be done. And certainly there's some people who are saying, what we need is a preemptive strike, and this is the only thing that can be done. And Barry's response is, you can't do a preemptive strike. You're not knocking out somebody's air force. Many of these missiles are on mobile trucks. They're deep underground. And these missiles, Hamas has them, Hezbollah has them, Syria has them, Iran has them, and if the nuclear attack were to come on Israel, it could have a totally disastrous effect. Now, at one time, of course, Israel said, if we face annihilation, we'll use nuclear weapons. That was the Samson option. So I'm going to let Barry address what's going on, and maybe even address the Samson option. Is there anybody there who would even consider that today?
Well, again, if Israel was the Israel of old, the bad boy in the neighborhood, it would threaten Egypt with annihilation of the Aswan Dam, which would cause a 50-foot wave to sweep through the Nile Valley and kill everyone in its path. Or it could nuke the Kaaba and put an end to this symbol of Islam. I mean, there are things they could threaten with the Samson option, but the Arabs are not threatened. you can see that they could care less about the Samson option. And this is one of the side of the war last year in Lebanon that we should recognize. The Hezbollah was quite capable of letting Lebanon be utterly destroyed as part of the price for knocking out Israel. Now, I don't know if the Arabs are all that afraid of a nuclear weapon right now. The people certainly should be, but the leaders might just say it's worth it for knocking out Israel. I mean, they're that crazy right now. The point is the Samson option wasn't even considered last year when one-third of the country was forced from its homes. That was supposedly an excuse, a pretext for using the Samson option when the country no longer could function because of an attack from an enemy army. But it wasn't mentioned, never. And again, I've heard people telling me that Israel wasn't faced with annihilation. I'm not so sure that that's when your cities are abandoned for over a month and the people can't go home for over a month, that you don't pull out the Samson option. That's what it's for. But it was not pulled out. So, now my next thesis, and the one that I've been on tour, I'm calling you now from Spring Valley, New York. You're calling me, actually. But the issue I've been saying to all my people, and I've been trying to get this through, is the Israeli government hates you. And they are capable of taking down Israel. And a very daring thing for me, I switched my speech. I gave a speech in Denver, and I ironed it out, and I added the Sabbateans. I said, people, you have to understand that Israel is not run by Jews. These people could care less about Jews. They despise the religious. And I said to my religious audience last night, you know, in Israel you're against the law? And nobody walked out. I mean, they stared at each other and they listened to the facts. And they heard me till the end. And maybe I made some effect on the religious community. There were about 30 people there, but they were a smart bunch. But I said outright, these people will take down Israel. And this is something you have to understand. And these people will never, ever allow the religious movement that you're pushing with all the Aliyah to change the character of their state. They built it, and they feel that Israel should be a Sabbatean state.
Well, do you think the average conservative or Orthodox Jew even knows what the Sabbateans are?
Oh, they do indeed.
They
know who the Frankists are very, very well.
Okay.
Anyone versed in Israeli, in Jewish history, is very well that Jacob Frank was a major threat to Judaism in Europe. He was a man with a lot of followers, and a lot of powerful people became Frankists. Jacob Frank was the second Messiah after Sabbatai Tzvi. This is a part of Jewish history forgotten by the mainstream, forgotten by Israeli historians, but religious and Orthodox historians are well aware of the effect of Sabbatai Tzvi and Jacob Frank.
But do you think the average Jewish person would be, I certainly the historian would be, but, you know, I'd like to consider I was fairly intelligent. It wasn't until we heard you talking and remembered Rabbi Adelman's work and then went, of course, to our Encyclopedia Americana and checked it out and realized this really was a very real movement that had plagued Jewry for a long period of time. Do you think the average Jew, you know, because the average Jew isn't a historian.
Well,
is he much smarter than I am? Probably is, as a matter of fact. Do you think your audience was well aware of the Frankists?
Well, it's like the Rabin assassination. It took me 7-8 years to sway a whole country that there was something wrong with the Rabin assassination, that Amir couldn't have killed him, and that Shimon Peres and Carmi Gilon had their fingers in that assassination every which way. And this argument is much more complicated than the Rabin assassination, which I gathered the evidence for. Number one, Jews are very stubborn. If they did not know this ahead and had formed their world viewpoint over their lifetime and created a reality that they can't part with. They will not readapt their reality by accepting a new, an entirely new and dramatic change of their reality. The fact is that the Jews have been infiltrated from within, that the labor Zionists control Israel no matter what the Israeli people want. The elections mean nothing. And this issue, I actually had a little bit of fight with my host yesterday. He believes that Moshe Feiglin in some way is going to save Israel. It's a joke to even think such a thing. But more to the point, he quotes Feiglin saying that at least Israeli democracy is still a democracy. The one with the most votes becomes prime minister. No, it's not. The Israeli democracy is completely taken over by outside forces. They're the ones who fund the upcoming Israeli leaders. And if you happen to be an outsider, and there aren't many, there are none right now, but who happens to rise, they will corrupt you. And we've seen that in the case of Avigdor Lieberman, who now wants Israel to join the EU, and he wants EU soldiers in Gaza. This guy was a Russian far-rightist, with lots of rumors that he had ties to the mafia, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, if you aren't corrupt, when you began your career, the minute you step into the Knesset, you will become corrupt, and that's just a fact of life. Okay? There is no democracy in Israel. And unless that is understood, there's no point in going on. If you believe that you can actually vote in an election and change Israel, you're nuts. That's not the way the system works. You'll get a Netanyahu who is just tied to the CFR as Olmert is. Okay? Or you'll get an Olmert who is just as tied to the Vatican because of Shimon Peres, essentially. And now you find that the Vatican and the CFR are actually working hand-in-hand together to wipe out Israel, and the whole world is against the country now. There's nowhere for it to go. You start to get the picture that the world wants Israel to go, that the strategy used was to get Israel's leaders to weaken the country with every piece of legislation they can manage. Now, in the last week, about a week ago, the Israeli government sanctified the release of 259 very serious terrorists. The Arabs are saying that no, they weren't serious terrorists. I've read the reports. They got blood in their hands all over the place. They're being released. And we simply understand that the government got nothing in return whatsoever. Nothing. And this is the way of the government. These terrorists that they release, the figures show that about 40% of it will be back in action and better than ever. And Israel did that. That's this week's newest legislation. The government of Israel is working with what we call the New World Order, or the Illuminati of the Vatican, or the Sabbateans of the CFR. Nonetheless, they are working with them, and they are not working for the Jewish people. And I spent two-hour lectures trying to convince these people, and I think I did a good job, by the way. If book sales were pretty good, some people bought everything. Going by that, I actually may have convinced them that the Israeli leadership hates the Jewish religion, that if you're a religious Jew in Israel, you have no rights whatsoever, that the police are going to be opposed to you and will beat you up. They did that this week in the town of Chomish, one of the four Samaria towns abandoned 2 years ago by the government. A group of settlers went there to commemorate, to vow to rebuild. It doesn't matter. They were beaten senseless by the police on their horses with their clubs. This is life in Israel. There is no democracy. There is only a leadership trying to wreck the country.
Well, our guest is Barry Shamish. He doesn't paint a pretty picture, but I agree with him. There's a real problem in Israel, and of course we can transpose these same sinister forces working here in America as well. And so there is a common destiny, I believe, between what happens to Israel and what will happen in America. Pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, you know, I had the crowds I've had have been very emotional, really emotional. And I've had a few leave each lecture, and I've had women really in tears when I explain the threat to Israel. And I start telling them that this is... I spoke before and after Tisha B'Av. That's the fast and commemoration of the loss of Solomon's and Herod's temples. It's a very sad day, and the rabbis give long lectures, and Rabbi number one at the synagogue was very pro-Kahanis, and he was talking about no land for two people, only one land for one people, only one land can live in one area, geographical area, and so forth, like it was the days when you could transfer Arabs out of Israel. I mean, there were days like that, but it's not 67 anymore, and it's absurd to believe that you could bring up this subject right now. The mood has been so thoroughly snuffed out of these people. And the rabbi last night, or the night before actually, in what's called the Five Towns of Long Island, gave this long, barely understandable, if you ask me, sermon on regaining the Beit Mikdash, the Holy of Holies. If only there were 12 men who were sincere about it, we would get it back. And I said to myself, are these guys nuts? Israel, this may be their last Tisha B'Av with Israel. This could be it for Israel. Israel has never faced such danger. And they're talking about bring back the Beit Mikdash. We'll be lucky if we have a Jerusalem to bring back a Beit Mikdash. And this is how they're talking. And I just said to myself, here I am in America, 1941. These are the Jews. They're nuts. There's nothing to be done with them. And go back into your hovel. Go fishing. Go anywhere. There's nothing that can be done to these people. Now, fortunately, a few people came to see me, you know, altogether, really just, over 100, let's say, but it's not enough. And that's the point. There's no moving the American Jews to understand that Israel could be gone next week. No moving them. Now, my message is a very disturbing message because ultimately it means the Jews will have to take on the Zionist establishment head to head, because if they're selling up the state, and I try and prove they are, and by the way, all proof is they are, but the analysts, the writers from Israel, just think the government is stupid or even corrupt. They don't understand the real danger. And this is one of the saddest facts, that we need really good writing right now, and we've got a lot of crappy writing right now, and the mainstream writing may complain about the government, but it will never complain about the fact that the government is controlled by outsiders, that Shimon Peres, our new president, is a serial murderer, that he's an agent of the Vatican, that Olmert has got ties to the world. I'm not going to do the ties even to 9/11 of Olmert, but he's a crook who's been in business a long time and not a very bright crook. He's always been somebody's crony. Well,
hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry's been talking to audiences, across at least in the New York area, and he's had people coming out. At least they've sat and listened to him, and of course his message is not a nice one, but I think it's a very, very objective one, and certainly as I analyze what's going on in the Near East and the Middle East, I see no hope for Israel at the present time. The way things look from a geopolitical point of view, and Barry's message is very simple. The leaders of Israel are traitors. They serve a different master. Certainly Olmert serves the Council on Foreign Relations, as does Benjamin Netanyahu, and certainly Perez serves the Vatican, and both of these groups have no loyalty to Israel as such, and Israel could very well be destroyed if this war comes down. And we should not even say if the war comes down. It's a matter of when the war comes down. So pick the story up there.
Well, the point I was making is that the Jews are fighting two wars. They've got the Arabs, which is bad enough, but they've got a worse war, and that's an internal war. They have to get rid of labor Zionism. And we're not talking left-right, peacemakers, non-peacemakers. These people have been conniving away Jewish life in this world. It's been going on for well over a century. If you want to trace it back, it goes back to the time of Jacob Frank, 1786. The fact is there should be 80 million Jews in the world. Thanks to these labor Zionists, we're lucky we have 12 million today. Between the pogroms and the Holocaust and assimilation, we're lucky we have 12 million. Half of them live in Israel. These people tried to make Israel not a shelter for anti-Semitism, not a shelter for the Jews. They were trying to make it a Sabbatean state. This is something I've gone over with so many times. And now people are understanding that they're serious. They're now, the police are a bunch of thugs in Israel. The courts you cannot get justice in. They back the Arabs every time there's a dispute between an Arab and a Jew. Every time. No matter how innocent the Jew is, the courts back him on simple matters like Arabs killing a man's cattle. They back the Arabs who kill the man's cattle. People don't understand that secretly, forget the Knesset, behind the scenes, war has been declared against religious Jews, and they're actually going to have to fell the Zionist establishment, labor Zionists. They're going to have to bring it down. And if they bring them down, they better have something better to replace Zionism with, because the right-wing Zionism is gone, thanks to Sharon, who deliberately destroyed the Heirut movement, which did offer an opposition. They have to take on the Zionist establishment because they are wrecking Israel, and they will not be able to put up something better in its place. They won't be able to agree on a darn thing, nothing. So we've got that issue. It's too hard. I'll tell you something. It's just too hard to sort this mess out and give the Jews hope for a long future. Seems nigh impossible right now. It's the people are too divided. There are too many egomaniacs who think they're right, and they will disturb you no matter what. They will disturb and disturb and disturb, and every one of them become minor leaders of even their own home, but it's going to be their way. You can't build a nation with the Jewish people. It's too egotistical and divided. It can't be done.
Well, is there anybody there who's a potential leader that you could depend on?
No. No, I'm sorry to stop you, but no, of course not.
All right. Well, no, that's all. You're not stopping me at all. I was asking the question, and I wanted to get your impression because, well, certainly as we look and see what's happening now, this last week, why the Arab League had sent a delegation, I know from Jordan, and I've forgotten which other country, but several of the countries from the Arab League had come to see Olmert and had offered him peace in our time if they would, the Jews would simply pull back to the border that they had before the 67 war. The Arab League then would guarantee Israel's right to exist and would intervene and stop the war. And when we get back, I want to get to Chris Barry Shavis's view on this offer. Is it sincere? Netanyahu said no, we cannot accept it. I don't know what Netanyahu's alternative is, but we'll be back in just a moment. I don't think that many of the major Arab countries, like Saudi Arabia and Jordan, really want a war because it could destabilize their countries as well. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and Barry, first, I'm sure you're well aware of the offer this week from the Arab League. Do you think it's a sincere offer? Do you think that there's any way they could really guarantee Israel's security, even if they did pull back out of the 67 boundary? Because certainly they can't speak for Hamas. They can't speak for Hezbollah. They can't speak for Syria or for Iran. So what is the Arab League trying to accomplish?
Before the war, they want to prove that they tried to offer Israel peace. Well, what else are they trying to accomplish? It's a PR game. And what Netanyahu says, I don't listen to. He's just a CFR flack. And I really wouldn't quote him very often either. If he actually got elected, he would just back down in every word he says now. And it's all part of the game. And I never quote a Netanyahu, never. What for? Who cares what an Israeli politician... This is what the protesters of Gush Katif did. They would play Ariel Sharon saying that we can never have a Zionist state without Gush Katif, and they would play his statements and prove that now he's a liar. Big deal. I mean, you have to understand, no Israeli politician is not a liar. They're all liars. So... don't bother quoting Netanyahu, it's a waste of time. The Arab League have now offered Israel peace. Israel turned it down. Good, we can have a big war, and we tried to offer them peace, and they turned it down. That's clearly what this little PR operation was all about. But now back to the real world.
All right, fine.
I've been in the five cities, the five towns, it's called, of Long Island, New York, and I gave a lecture. And I lived with, for 3 days, a family of modern Orthodox. It's hard to say. Orthodox, with some modernity, whatever you want to classify them as, they are moving to Israel in droves. The guy I stayed with has a house in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and he's renting the house he stays in Woodmere. These people are the only, literally, the only aliyahs called immigration to Israel from the United States. And they're coming in vast numbers. Now, I mentioned to a visiting couple that we were having a lot of trouble selling an apartment in Modi'in. I told them the apartment was paid for. My ex-wife was quite wealthy. She put the money down, bought an apartment for $250,000.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Barry Shamish. And Barry is simply commenting that there are Jews that are going back at this time in history, which, it seems, knowing what I know and what I hope our listeners realize, that we're on the edge of cataclysmic times and catastrophic times for Israel. Jews are returning to Israel. We're hearing that French Jews are going and that Jews are coming from other countries and they're moving to Israel just before this missile war is going to come. And then Barry was talking about property over there that his ex-wife has a very, I suppose it's a fairly valuable home. Go ahead, finish the rest of the story, Barry.
Well, we anticipated that an 8-room on 2 levels with 2 gardens apartments, which we bought for $250,000 9 years ago, would be about $400,000 today. Now, on that block where we bought, a very prestigious block, there are lots of houses for sale, and nobody can get rid of their houses. And the best price that I've heard is $200,000. In other words, it dropped from $250,000 200. And now I told these people that we couldn't get rid of this house, and they said, why not? And I said, because of all the Israelis moving out of Israel. And they look stunned and said to me, no, it's the other way around. All these Jews are moving to Israel. And I said to them, no, those are the ones you hear about the news. They're not publicizing the fact that 4 times as many are leaving as they're coming in. And they're getting this from an Israeli trying to sell a house. It's a very practical way to get an idea. The real estate market there is lousy. And they were stunned, absolutely stunned. They had bought the propaganda that the Jews were moving to Israel. And this is because of Nefesh B'Nefesh, an Aliyah organization, working very hard amongst the Jews of the five towns to send them to Israel into a battleground in a country where the unemployment rate is sky high. And, well, this is the war that the Sabbateans are going to win. They're trying to win. They cannot stand the fact that the only Jews who are attracted to Israel, from America certainly, are these Orthodox Jews. We've got ourselves the makings of first-class war, because Israel will not be a secular majority very shortly. I don't think it's a secular majority right now. And this is the reason the Sabbateans are going crazy with violence against religious Jews. They really, really hurt them now. There's a story going around the internet about some rabbi in Beit Shemesh. I heard the other side, by the way, today, from these people from Beit Shemesh, that he was trying to block modern Orthodox from shopping. They show too much leg or too much arm. It doesn't matter. When the police came in and arrested him, the policeman threatened him with, "We'll see who can hit a Jew or not." And that's what he told them, and so they rioted. They demonstrated 3,000 in New York. Now, it's a minor incident except for one thing. When you add it all up, the police right now have got instructions that the religious are simply not lawful citizens of Israel. And unless the religious understand that they are literally in the country by virtue really of history itself and not of the government. The government doesn't want them there. The government is going to try and pull them out of their houses with or without this upcoming war, but they're gone. And they don't realize that there's another war going on, that they're the other side of the war, and they're fighting against the Sabbatean leadership of Israel. They don't realize it. A few now realize it after my talk. Now, just to add something, I made a mistake. I bought two copies of Bye Bye Gaza from Lulu, and I was going to use them for my lectures and tell other people to go to lulu.com and sign in my name, Chamish, by the way, Chamish, and get Bye Bye Gaza. So I don't have it with me, but I spoke about that book and how the Israeli people and the religious people and settlers let Gaza go. I said the government infiltrated them. They were like puppets. They were like yo-yos. They wasted their time for a year and a half. Every act they did was organized by the government, and they didn't even realize it. And I went through this awful fact that the Israeli government are in control. They run the Secret Service. They run the Shabak. They decide the next move. And people, I told them, you have to bring them down. There is no choice. As long as they have that control, you can't win the war, because they know when the next battle is going to be, and you don't. So I tried explaining how we lost Gaza and how we're going to lose the rest of Israel because of the leadership, how our army has no morale anymore, the usual. But the fact remains, even with Gaza gone, which was a tremendously traumatic event in the lives of the religious, especially when they brought 300,000 people out to the Western Wall 2 days before the expulsion from Gaza, and the prayers didn't work. Okay, it's that simple. The prayers were in total vain. Even then, they're still looking at a pretty Israel, and I can't figure it out. How can they be so brainwashed? When the religious community is being uprooted, when the people of Gaza today are living in shacks, in trailers, they never were compensated for their homes, their livelihoods. The Israeli government are laughing at them. They love to see the religious suffer. And yet they don't understand that this is going on in Israel, that the religious will suffer even more during the next war, when they do like the citizens of Gush Katif and walk into the boxcars with their hands in the air. And I'm afraid that we're heading in that area where the proud Israeli who defended his land, I'm afraid that's gone. You're going to look at the sniveling Jew coming up very, very shortly. We're back to the sniveling Jew. And even worse, I think we may be back to a very, very quick and ugly Holocaust.
Well, certainly I'm not going to disagree with anything you've said, because I share all of your concerns, and I can see the marked similarity between what is happening in your country and what is happening in my country today. When our people don't realize, of course, that the right, the left, the conservative, the liberal, the Republican, the Democrat, the pro-war, the anti-war, it's all manipulated by the same people, and the average individual just doesn't understand. They want a controlled opposition. As long as it's controlled, they don't care what the opposition is, because it's not going to accomplish anything. And the fact that they could get 300,000 people there, you know, out in front of the Wailing Wall, and of course accomplishing nothing, spending a lot of time demonstrating, and yet of course that effort had been spent defending Gaza, why the Gaza, they could never pull off what they did.
Well, we have to, I'm going to look at an event. First of all, people, go to my website. It'll get you there writing the Barry Chamish, just write barrychamish.com. It'll actually get you to the website.
And tell them again how they can get your books there at lulu.com.
Yeah, I put my newest book and a bunch of others, and a very strange one, which I should tell you about, Return of the Giants, the very peculiar aerial phenomenon that harangued Israel while the Oslo Accords were being written. Return of the Giants is also at Lulu. You go www.lulu.com, and then you write my name under search, Chamish, and all the books will come out.
How many books are there, Barry?
If you want to know how Israel is being set up to die, the same way that they set up Gaza, the exact same way the country is now in the same hands. And I'm trying to tell these audiences in America, the leadership of Israel do not care if the country goes. Their mission was to form a Sabbatean state, a state that hates the Torah, a state that hates the Talmud, that believes in the opposite of the Torah and the Talmud. They have failed. They failed because religious Jews are the only ones now enthusiastic about Israel. This is a major failure of the Sabbateans. They could not turn on secular Jews or secular people to love Israel. They couldn't do it. And all you have left who actually still care about Israel are the very people they despise the most, the religious Jews.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what transpires, and I think it's only really a matter of weeks or at the most months before this whole house of cards comes tumbling down. And the question is, what is the United States going to do? The United States is the 800-pound gorilla that could make a difference there. I'm not sure that getting involved in a war with Iran is going to save Israel, but it's going to be very, very interesting. What do you think is going to happen as far as Iran is concerned? Do you have any thoughts at all?
No, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. What the Americans have planned for Iran has nothing to do with anything but an air war. That's all they can do. United States can't take on Iran. Israel can't take on Iran. It's a big red herring, Iran. The biggest issue is Israel is surrounded by its own enemies. The worst being Syria, which has, I've heard 40,000 missiles at the ready, and not Iran. How many missiles can Iran send? They can ship them to Hezbollah, but Iran is not part of the war, not directly anyways.
Have you heard, of course, that many of those Syrian weapons are missiles are tipped with either chemical or biological weapons?
Sure. The Syrians themselves are bragging they're bragging what I've been saying all along. On day one, Tel Aviv will be bombarded with missiles. That's what I've been saying now for months on end, that we know their war plans. They learned from the war last year. They learned that Israel cannot survive a missile war, get Tel Aviv where Army intelligence lives, turn it into rubble in one day, make sure that no fire truck or ambulance or rescue vehicle of any kind can save anybody. There's so much damage to the country. Wreck Tel Aviv first. Then, of course, this time around, you hit the airfields. I'll tell you, Israel won't have much of an air force when its air bases, when its airfields, when the runways are all pocked with rocket holes. This is what the Saudi Arabians have promised Syria and Iran, that come the war, they will shoot from the south, from Saudi Arabia. That's where two of Israel's biggest air bases are, just north of Eilat. You start hammering them with rockets, and you're not even going to have an air force be able to take off or land. The Arabs have it worked out now. Israel is going to be bombarded, and Israel may or may not survive, depending just on raw will. But frankly, I don't think when the electricity goes off, when they start bombarding every road, when they start bombarding all the infrastructure of Israel, I don't believe the country will survive 4 days. And after that, the Arabs, who are much more numerous, will start sniffing around Israel, looking for whatever they can steal, and even better, let the isolated settlements, first of all, run out of weaponry, and then just take the women and take the children, gather the men, make them watch their families raped in front of their eyes. Then the men will have their throats slit in front of their women. The Arab way of death is extremely cruel. And you're going to see a Holocaust in those days. Now, I'm going to bring up a piece of news that is very, very weird, and yet it is news. Now, I have gone on this show and I've described Rudolf Kastner. Rudolf Kastner was the Jewish agency representative to Hungary. He went to Budapest and met with Adolf Eichmann, and Eichmann offered him all 800,000 Jews huddling in Hungary in exchange for 700 trucks. That was it, 700 trucks. And they weren't military trucks. According to what I've read, it's just trucks to get his loot out of Hungary. And the Jewish agency turned the offer down. And more than that, they arrested the man who took the offer, Rabbi Yoel Brandt. He was arrested in Aleppo, Syria, by the second Prime Minister of Israel, Moshe Sharet. In other words, Kastner negotiating with Eichmann could have saved 800,000 Jews. But the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem, led by Chaim Weizmann, wanted the Jews dead. Kastner returned to Israel with 3,500 hand-picked Sabbateans and family. Now, what's going on that's so disturbing is that Yad Vashem, which is the capital of the World Holocaust Movement, the holiest site of Israel, where the 6 million Jews are remembered, is now promoting a campaign to get Kastner rehabilitated. They're now claiming he was a great savior of Jews. They're now turning back the trial of Malkiel Greenwald, a 2-year trial with endless witnesses, which led to the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht. All is going to be done backwards now because Kastner, well, he simply saved more Jews than anybody else, they claim, single-handedly. That is the Sabbateans changing the events of the Holocaust. They killed Raoul Wallenberg, the Swede in Budapest, who really did save Jews, who really was a hero. The Jewish agency ordered him murdered. They blamed the Russians, which is utter nonsense. The Russians kept quiet. The Jewish agency had him murdered. Adolf Eichmann was brought to Jerusalem, and Rudolf Kastner was murdered in his bed in Tel Aviv's Hadassah Hospital. All the people who knew the secrets of the Hungarian sellout were murdered in their own way. And I include Eichmann in that, by the way. He was put in a soundproof booth. Who knows what he was saying? The fact is, they wiped out the people who actually knew. Now they're trying to rehabilitate Kastner. You may as well just rehabilitate Eichmann then. Let's go all the way. You're talking, the Sabbateans are changing the history of the Holocaust and changing a first-class mass-murdering little skunk named Rudolf Kastner into a hero who saved more Jews than anyone else. This, to me, and anyone who really, really cares about the Holocaust, is an utter calamity. And that's what's going on in Jerusalem this week.
Well, of course, the problem is that most people really don't know history. They don't understand what's happened. They've been watching too much on the History Channel, too much on the Discovery Channel. It's great, it's great show business, but it's not going to tell you about the secret forces working behind the scenes. Of course, creating the pathway of history. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Yeah, well, I have your address, and I'm going to send you a new DVD. Someone, while I was in New York, did something very nice for me. He took all my Return of the Giant DVDs, all the programs, the sightings program, the Fox TV program, and turned it into a DVD. And I'm going to send you a copy of that when I get back to Florida. And if you like it, tell people about this DVD. Before I even label it, you'll be the first to get a copy.
Well, I'll certainly appreciate it. And, you know, any of the people that, of course, you've been speaking to, have any of them heard any of your programs on Radio Liberty?
Oh, yes. It's been a marvelous opportunity. And yes, I have many comments about my programs. Many.
All right, that's good to know. You know, because as I sit here night after night, all alone in my studio, I'm wondering, is anybody out there listening? But the fact that you're doing as well as you are, and at least you're getting some invitations, you know, is certainly very encouraging to me, and I'm glad you're hearing from the people you're speaking with now. I really look forward to this DVD on the Return of the Giants. In fact, I certainly believe this is an important story, and I hope one of these evenings why we can get you to go on and tell us chapter 2. We've heard chapter 1, but we've never got to chapter 2, and I think there are, what, 11 chapters to the book?
Yeah, chapter 2 is a good one. And it's got a lot of biblical references for your illumination and enjoyment. So we will do it.
All right, maybe we could do that next week, unless there's something else that's really very, very urgent, because I personally believe, of course, that there is a supernatural element behind everything that goes on. We live in one world, and certainly it's a material world. It's the only thing we can influence, but there is another world out there, and I believe that the giants, even though it's very difficult to believe that there really could be giants out there, there was something that happened there, which was, what, 1992?
1987.
What was it?
1987 was next chapter. We go back to 1887 and to Haifa in the next chapter.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to look forward to that. Well, anyway, Barry, thank you so very much for being with us. And
thank you for having me as usual.
All right, good night. God
Bye.
Bless, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, well, that was Barry Shamish, and certainly one of my favorite guests. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you're getting beginning to understand what his message is. It's a powerful message. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we are certainly living in very, very difficult times. And as we hear Barry talking about what's going on over in Israel, and of course we've talked to some people who have relatives in Israel, and they took away their gas masks. Why would you take away the gas mask when Syria has tens of thousands of missiles that are tipped with either chemical or biological weapons? Now, from a logical point of view, is that logical? But then here in the United States, where I believe that we sooner or later are going to have some major attacks with certainly chemical or biological or nuclear weapons, we have no civil defense to defend the American people. Certainly there are shelters for the elite and for the congressmen and for Dick Cheney and for George Bush and for the certainly the people in key positions in Washington, D.C., but no shelters for the American people. And we can waste billions of dollars on useless projects. They were going to spend $250 million to build a bridge up in Alaska to an island. I think there were 40 people on the island. They called it the Bridge to Nowhere. $250 million on a bridge to an island with 40 people on it. But, of course, we can't provide any defense for the American people. It really doesn't make sense. And so many things don't make sense. We attack Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden, and then we don't capture him. We attack Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction, and we don't find any. And then we do everything we can to destabilize the country. We dissolve the army and the police and the civil service and shut down all the government factories so there's no jobs, and the people have a sense of hopelessness. And they keep telling us we're fighting Al-Qaeda. We're not fighting Al-Qaeda. We're fighting people who want to get us out of their country because they think that we didn't go there because we wanted to help them. They think we went there to create chaos, which we've done, and it doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, there has to be another explanation. Let me suggest our four tape sets on 9/11, 9/11 update. Why did the buildings come down? Our pamphlets called 911 foreknowledge, foreknowledge 911, the three pamphlets. But then to put things into their proper perspective, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the three pamphlet set, The Occult Hierarchy. You need to get my talk entitled Forbidden Secret. Forbidden Secret. And then, of course, our material by Chris Pinto, the talk he gave for us called the Atlantis Connection, the talk by Constance Cumby on the emergence about the coming world leader, and then, of course, Chris Pinto's wonderful DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and there is a secret mystery. And then his DVD on Riddles in Stone, the secret architecture of our nation's capital, because there is within the architecture of our nation's capital an explanation of why we are involved in a war in the Middle East today. And if you're looking at things from a logical point of view, you won't find them. But if you look behind the scenes, you'll find the keys. You'll find out about the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. In fact, President Bush talked about him twice in his first inaugural speech. That's why when you get, of course, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, you'll want to get the syllabus, and you'll have the speeches to read and evaluate and understand what this is really all about. Who is the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm? That's the conclusion to the first inaugural address. But, of course, nobody ever asks the question, and nobody ever gives the answers any more than answering Barry's questions. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.